WCG's after further review, as this is one of Frank's favorite songs.
Do not listen to him. He is selling you snake oil.
We don't sell snake oil, but we provide an entertaining and thought-provoking sports show on 88.3 WXUT, Saturdays from 11 a.m. to 1 p.m., and sometimes we provide a life lesson. Ain't that right, Frank?
Life lesson my ass.
Don't be a hater, and tune in to AFR Saturday mornings, 11 to 1 on WXUT. Hola. WGT's after further review, as Frank is picking up the mic as he has no apologies, as he wants Tom Izzo to retire.
Let's not get it twisted around.
Jim Boeheim, the game is passing him by, along with
Derek. Come on, let's not twist it around.
Tony Bennett
and jump the shark.
Tony Bennett should be ate by a shark because he got beat by the Golden Retrievers.
And no. Here, let me just come in and say that.
I'll keep the instrumental going because you're like Eminem. You have no apologies, and I want to hear what you got to say.
I have to make a shout out.
Hold on. Let me do this. Let me be the producer of this. We also have Coach Bowen from the Dundee Vikings on the phone line, along with David the Man of God Harris. Me and David are here shaking our heads, wondering the logic of Frank Vashener. You were going on a roll in the last two segments, Frank, and then you went off the rails. What's going on here with no apologies?
Well, look, my belief is after her losses like Virginia had or what Michigan State had, I think really everybody within the program has to take a good long look and wonder, maybe we've got to do something different. I mean,
play better that day. That's a start.
Play better is the obvious thing. But, I mean, what things do we got to do to avoid things like this in the future?
Okay.
I mean, I'm pretty sure that Mike Krzyzewski had to do that when Duke lost in the first round to Lehigh and to Mercer. I'm pretty sure he had to take a long look at things and be like, you know.
Then he got a chip.
Yeah. I don't think it was just on a whim like, oh, well, better luck next year.
I don't think Izzo did that. I mean, you're saying that he's on the back nine. What about Krzyzewski? Is he on the back nine?
I think. Well,
he's older Krzyzewski, than Izzo.
Well, yeah. I don't think Krzyzewski's gonna coach until he's in his 80s.
Maybe he might be like that nun and be in a wheelchair.
I doubt that. I mean, I don't see him doing that. I think that if. I don't think it would be after this year, but I think maybe
he might be like Stephen Hawking, where
Stephen Hawking, rest in peace.
Right, he might be like him, where he pulls up in the wheelchair and even has the voice machine.
That won't happen.
Where he runs multiple offensive half court sets and runs tenacious man to man defense.
Yeah, that won't happen. I mean, but I want Jordan to chime in on this.
Has Jordan been watching us on the live stream? Because he must have been listening, or were you giving him your verbal diarrhea to him earlier in the week?
I mean, he may have heard some. He may have heard some of it at an earlier time.
Okay, well, Coach Bolin here is on the phone lines, and we'll turn down a little bit of the instrumental because you already got out your no apologies rant there, Frank. What do you think about Frank and his take on Tom Izzo? Has the game passed them by? Because one, he runs too many half court sets, and two, he's playing too much man-to-man defense. Maybe he should go to a 1-3-1. Maybe be even like Syracuse and go to that amoeba zone.
Well, I don't necessarily agree with Frank as far as the defensive side of the ball with the zone. That's what they're known for. Their stingy man-to-man defense is as good as it gets in college basketball. But the one thing I would like to point out that Frank does have a point on, when they played Syracuse, they actually outshot Syracuse, I think, by 29 shots. I could be mistaken. I thought that's what I heard, that they had like something like 26 or 27 offensive rebounds, and they had 29 more shot attempts, which I gotta believe is close to a half of basketball, right? I mean, that's almost an entire half's worth of shots for them to not win that game is kind of head scratching. But
they had 51 rebounds total.
Yeah, I mean that's an insane number, especially against that Syracuse team that's so huge. But defensively, no, I do disagree with Frank. And me and Frank talk.
Oh, yeah, by the way, sorry not to cut you off, Coach Bolin, but they had 66 mm-hmm. shots with 51 rebounds.
Yeah, that's insane. that's what I mean. They probably outshot Syracuse by almost an entire half of basketball for them to They lost by 2 points, was it, or three?
They lost by two. 55-53.
That's the most head-scratching side of the tournament to me, besides the shooting percentage by UMBC against Virginia in the first round. But I agree and disagree with Frank. Offensively, why Jackson and Ward were on the bench so much in that game is kind of head-scratching, but to just out-rebound somebody like that, not be able to put points on the board, that's a telling sign that maybe it's time to bring in some help like Beilein did. You know, Beilein has always been kind of known for an offensive guru, couldn't coach defense. So what did he do? He went out and got two defensive assistant coaches, and that's propelled them to the run they've made this year. Maybe it's time for Izzo to go get help offensively and kind of catch up with the way the game's evolved on the three-point line. You know, he's got a ton of talent, a ton of, you know, a couple lottery picks on that team for a second-round exit. That's kind of just shocking.
Well, can I ask
think you need some help.
Can I ask you this, though? And David brought up a good point, though. Isn't it come down to execution? I mean, Izzo's not shooting the shots, and they actually had some pretty good looks. I mean, they just were clanking it at the home arena, at the $5 holler arena up in the glove. I mean, it was just a bad shooting night. I mean, let's face it, if they shot like Michigan shot on Thursday night, will we even be having this conversation saying that Izzo's on the back nine?
No, you're absolutely correct. But the other thing, too, is you need shooters to execute shooting well.
Hold on, Coach Boland. Are you on a speakerphone?
Nope, I'm not.
Okay, because we can't barely – it's kind of going in and out. So I don't know if you're driving around in Michigan or –
Right. Nope, I'm in Blissfield right now. But
okay, that's better. It sounds a little bit better. It sounds like you're away from the phone.
Yeah, no. The one thing I'll say is you know, you look at Michigan and what they do and what Michigan State does. Michigan State is centered around those bigs. You know, mm-hmm. You've got Bridges, you've got Ward and Jackson. Mm-hmm. And that's where they center themselves. And, you know, they haven't been a great shooting team all year. And that was the first thing I said to Frank when I found out that they were going to play Syracuse in the second round. I said, that zone's going to give them fits. Because Syracuse – Jim Boeheim's a brilliant coach. He's not, you know, obviously he understands that one way a team's going to beat them is to shoot a high percentage from the outside. So what do? They chase you off that line and try to force you in a low percentage 2-point shots. And that's what they did. And Michigan State just couldn't execute. But, you know, you're right. Yeah, Coach Izzo's not shooting the shots for him, but you've got to evolve with the game. And the game today is not centered around these bigs. Now, Duke's got two of them, but those are two transcendent bigs. And Bagley, and then what's the other one's
Wendell,
name?
Wendell Carter. And I mean, I've said it before that Marvin Bagley is the type of guy that if you're a crappy NBA team, you tank for.
Right, yeah, just like the Grizzlies being beat by 61. But I got to ask you this, Coach Boland, and I did notice that they tried to do a little bit of – they did get some – one thing that irritated me was, I don't know if it was Ward or Carter, there was a couple times – he had shots at the free throw line where they did throw it in the middle, and he just wouldn't take it. He would just kick it back out for a three. I also noticed with Bridges a little bit, they didn't hit the short corner. I've noticed this in the men's game. I mean, I coached at St. John's, but I've also been involved with the women's game. I've noticed in the men's game there's more or less offensive sets for zones, more of a kind of a movement continuity offense, no really screen set or any try to dribble penetration. Why do you think that is in men's basketball and women? In women's basketball, they actually set a lot of down screens, cross screens to get some of those short corner shots open, or they try to attack the middle guy when maybe trying to post that person up, but you don't see it too often in men's basketball.
No, you're absolutely right, and it's funny that you brought that up because I just had that conversation the other day with a friend of mine. In our league, you know, we're in a smaller league conference from Northern Michigan, but one thing we always talk about is some of the better coaches in our leagues coached girls varsity before they coached boys. And the thing you'll see with girls is because they're not, you know,
as athletic.
It's just a different game.
Yeah, they're not as athletic.
You have to create open shots. Where guys, you know, can rise up and kind of shoot off the dribble a little bit better. But with girls basketball, the guys who coach girls varsities always make better boys varsity coaches because they know X's and O's better. They know how to get guys open. They know how to get people open. So that's one thing I've noticed with girls. But one thing we definitely take advantage of Dundee, you know, this year we were severely undersized. So one thing we went to was a zone defense. And once we switched to that zone defense is what allowed us to win 12 out of 13 games. But what we do is we run a 2-3, but we drop the top opposite guard to the high post.
So you basically run a staggered 2-3.
Basically, yeah, it's a stat. It's a 2-3 with two stat guards. And what it does is it makes people kind of think we're on a 1-3-1. That's one benefit of it. But the other thing it does is we've kind of realized how many teams nowadays hit that shot at the high post. That's the thing. Who hurts you from there? Now, when a team does hurt us from that, we adjust a little bit. We'll bring our big middle up a little bit to help defend that. But typically, we just put our little guards on them. And you'd be surprised more often than not, people don't even pass it there. And when they do, that guy's in such a hurry to just get the ball out of his hands. Now, did you watch the Michigan A&M game the other night?
The Michigan A&M game, I caught a little bit of. I mean, they were just smoking the threes on them, but they were hitting it through transition, and Mo Wagner was
everywhere.
Putting on
the
deck.
They couldn't miss. One thing Michigan did do in that game, and I don't know if you noticed, we talked about this yesterday in the group chat that we're all in, the coaching staff, is Charles Matthews, Mo Wagner, those guys were catching the ball at the high post. A&M was basically saying, go ahead and shoot it, and Michigan was converting. And then the problem is, once Michigan started hitting that big center guy in the middle of that 2-3, had to come up to defend him. At that point, you're able to seal those two wings behind you for bounce passes for layups. So that's kind of the same principle we like to coach with offensively, but defensively, we always say that, hey, we're not even gonna contest that high post shot till the guy makes a couple of them. Once he makes a couple of them, we'll go after it, because it's just a lost art now. You know, you hear people say that so much. So many kids don't practice that shot when they're in the gym shooting around. They just want to chuck threes.
Yeah,
that's kind of where the game's going.
Yeah, that is true. And I try to teach my bigs usually when we do. It's from Duke, but it's called the five shot, sometimes a four shot drill. And I try to at least get the bigs to shoot a left elbow jump shot, a middle free throw line jump shot, and then a right elbow shot. Because if you're open in the middle and the guard passes to you, you need to pivot and turn and try to make that shot. Definitely. Personally, with the zone, if it's a 2-3, I'm attacking the two guards, trying to set some ball screen action right there, maybe running a guy down the baseline, so at least it gets the defense shifting, and then that guy that comes off the ball screen can roll, maybe seal in the post on the big, or maybe you can set a fade screen. I've seen guys do that, set fade screens on that opposite guy on the 2-3 away from the ball, and see if you can get pop guys open. But a lot of times, even on our varsity, it's more of a 2-1-2 set in offense, a continuity. When you pass the ball here, the one big flashes, the other big goes to the short corner, and then the guard will cut through once it goes to the short corner. And, I mean, that's all we kind of run. Or on a 2-3, we might run something what we call 13, which is a 1-3-1 offensive set. There's a guy running down the baseline, and then the top guard maybe might use some dribble penetration. But usually in a zone, for me, obviously, if you swing the ball enough and get some ball screens, if you do it right, you're going to get some kind of mismatches on one side of the zone, either a 2-on-1 advantage or maybe a 3-on-2, or if you really do it right, a 3-on-1 advantage where the defender has to pick who he has to pick up. But you just don't see it in boys basketball. It's just pass the ball around east and west. And, you know, like I said, the more you get the ball in the basket is when you're going to get the win. You got to get points. You just can't be moving the ball around.
No, you're absolutely right. And that's when we have troubles, when teams really pack it in on us, you know, when teams pack it in and then, you know, you swing the ball around with no dribble penetration, the defense isn't moving much. That's when we really struggle, but we're at our best. There's no doubt about it. When we can get a little bit of dribble penetration, force the defense to collapse, get a kick out, get a closeout, then we can go by again, maybe hit the short corner, then hit a cutter down the middle. But, you know, that's just one thing you look at with that Michigan State game. You're talking about arguably one of the best coaches. I mean, he's a Hall of Famer, right? Izzo's a Hall of Famer. They just completely looked unprepared for the 2-3 zone. And he did say that after the game in his press conference. That zone is hard to prepare for with one day of prep. But you just what he allowed them to do is he allowed Syracuse to force Michigan State to play the game they didn't want to play. He allowed them to play from the perimeter and play from the high post without taking that shot. And I got to believe the guy he was playing most of the game at that high post position was a guy that they obviously felt gave them the best option at that position, right? Because, you know, you had one lottery pick and, you know, maybe one of the best six men in the Big Ten sitting on the bench that whole time. So, yeah, it's mind-boggling. That's kind of what I'm getting at. Beeline went out and found assistant coaches to help them in their main deficiency, which was defense. And obviously it's paid dividends, because you look at the first two games of this tournament where they did not play well offensively. They didn't shoot. They didn't do anything well. They were still able to win. And, you know, a little bit of luck, don't get me wrong. Obviously the Jordan Poole shot was tremendous amount of luck. But you need that to win a tournament, right? I mean,
right,
if you go back, you're going to find out every team's at some point's gotten a little lucky. But
Oh, yeah, you
they
have
win those games because of their defense.
Yeah, another thing that Duke did really well against Syracuse's zone, and I don't know why Michigan State didn't do it. I mentioned the ball screens and the dribble penetration. But with Syracuse, you got to play above the rim. Well, you had Miles Bridges, that's probably one of the best above-the-rim players in the country, and they used that with Bagley having him on that short corner because once you get that dribble penetration, the big has to commit. And if you like I said, once again, you can get that 3-on-1 advantage. Either you're going to throw the pocket pass to the one big on the block, or if you got someone coming from the weak side like Bagley did from that short corner, they just threw it to the rim and he was getting dunks all day. Now, I don't understand why Michigan State didn't do that, but, I mean, you know, like I said, sometimes it's a little more easier said than done, especially with Syracuse. Normally in a regular zone, you're attacking the gaps, but they're so long, there's an arm there, and they can just recover. But like I said, do you think though Izzo's on the back nine? I mean,
no, I don't think Izzo's on the back nine. He looks fairly. I'm not exactly how sure he is, but no, I don't believe that. I just think he needs a little bit of help offensively. And you know, this team, everybody hypes this team up as being one of the best teams he's ever had. Yeah, super athletic, super high ceiling, maximum amount of potential. But let's face it, you know, this is what I do. They weren't the most skilled team he's ever had. They weren't great perimeter shooters. They weren't great passers. They were just really athletic and out-rebounded most of the teams in the Big Ten, so they were able to bully their way to that regular season Big Ten championship. But, you know, no, definitely not on the back nine. He needs to go find someone that can help him offensively. And I'm sure he will. He's a Hall of Fame coach for a reason because he's pretty smart. So I'm sure he'll figure that out.
Well, according to Frank, he might as well put that jacket away because, you know,
I didn't say that.
I mean, he's horrible. And you made a good point here, and Coach Bolin made a very good point. Because I was going to say this isn't one of his best teams of all time. They were just very athletic. They weren't very skilled. And basketball is a skilled sport. I mean, you got to be able to shoot. You got to be able to pass. He said they weren't great passers. Well, that's the big key here with basketball. You got to be great passers. Also, another thing I noticed, too, with the zone, people don't fake one to make one. I mean, people would be surprised making just a ball fake, how you can just carve up a zone. Because, I mean, let's face it, in a zone, a lot of times guys don't know what's going on behind them, and they're playing the passing lanes, let's face it. And you think that ball fake, the guy shows their hand. If a guy flashes, you can get the ball to him. He starts to open stuff up. But then again, though, AAU and youth leagues don't really, you know, teach that. So
one thing I do want to
get some
add,
bad basketball.
There's one thing I do want to add is, I mean, this not being the best team Izzo's ever had. I mean, that was the 2000 team. But yeah. Here, this is something the 2000 team had that this team absolutely.
09.
I mean, the 09 team you could probably throw in there, but the thing is the team they lost to in the national championship, that North Carolina team, nobody was beating them.
Yeah, that's true.
But here, this is what this team didn't have that the 2000 team had. They didn't have players who hated losing more than they loved winning. I heard Ryan Schuling bring this up on his show. And guys like Morris Peterson, Mateen Cleaves, Charlie Bell.
Wasn't Jason Richardson on that
Jay
team?
Rich was one of their sixth men.
Wasn't it Zach Randolph or was he
no,
a year later?
No, Z-Bo was later.
Later, okay.
But they those were guys.
All NBA players.
I mean, they hate. Those were guys who hated losing more than they loved winning. I think it was when they played Syracuse in the Sweet 16 at the Palace, and they were down at halftime. I think it was Cleaves who basically grabbed Mo Pete around the neck and got into him and said, "This is your last game. Hey, this how you want to go out?" And this team, I mean, I'm not knocking them for what they were doing off the court. I mean, they were the team. They had a lot of Bible studies together. Tum Tum Nairn was leading it, and I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I thought that was a good thing, but the thing is, they just didn't have that edge to them. Mm. You have to have. I mean, Jordan.
Maybe that explained why they didn't really play great defense, though. They always had that edge.
That edge is them. They had the edge, Frank. I mean, they out-rebounded Syracuse.
Jordan, I'm not talking about that rebounding. I'm talking about like that.
How about they just weren't?
That mean streak.
How about they just weren't skilled? I mean, he just
yeah, that too.
They couldn't shoot and they couldn't pass. I mean, those are kind of two crucial things.
They gave maximum effort, Frank. That team won a Big Ten regular season title, which is the most impressive thing that they did. But you don't get that without effort in an edge. You can't say and tell me they didn't have an edge because they went out and just completely outwork Syracuse at every turn. They just couldn't knock down shots. I mean, they knocked down shots. That's a 25-point blowout rebounding the team 2-1. They just couldn't knock down shots. And it's a one-game sample. They play Syracuse seven times. They win five.
Yeah,
they beat them five times. It's a one-game sample. That's what the tournament is. That's why it's really the worst way to pick a national champion, but it's the most enjoyable way for fans. You know, anything can happen, but it's really not. The best team, let's face it, how often does the number one overall seed win? I mean, they probably win more than other teams, but probably 40% of the time, if I had to guess.
I mean, the last time I remember the number one overall seed winning, I mean, may have to check on this. I want to say it was Kentucky in 2012.
What was North Carolina last year?
Were they the number one? I'm not sure.
I think Gonzaga was the number one overall, but I think Michigan State or North Carolina was the one. But that's what I'm saying. I'm not going to sit here and say that they didn't have. I say they probably didn't have great leadership from the players, but you can't tell me they didn't have an edge, because that team was a team of warriors. They went, and that's how they won. They just went out and out battled you, and out rebounded you, and punished you at the rim. They just, when you're talking about one game sample size, you run into a game where you can't hit a shot. That's what happens. And to only lose that game by two,
right?
That really shows how hard they did work in that game, because that's the only reason they were even in the game, is because they gave such a maximum effort.
They couldn't even hit the Detroit River. That's how bad they were shooting. So should Nick Cronin, should he get fired? I mean, he blew a 20-some point lead to Nevada, and they were a good team. You know, Tony Bennett, you know, he's out of here.
No, Cronin and Bennett, those are
Tony
guys.
Tony Bennett, to me, is the best coach in college.
Well, they lost to the 16 seed first time ever, according to Frank, man.
They did, but Tony Bennett does less with, or more with less than anybody, in my opinion. I think when you're talking about just coaching basketball, when you're taking a group of guys and getting the most out of them, to me it's Coach K and it's Tony Bennett as of late. Now, the same thing you said about Michigan State a couple of years ago. Remember when Michigan State lost to Middle Tennessee and it was a 15-2 and everyone was making a big deal out of it?
Yeah.
Anybody who had played Middle Tennessee that night was losing. Anybody. It didn't matter. And to me, the same can be said for UMBC. Whoever played them that night was losing. I mean, I watched that game from start to finish, and the whole game, my wife was sitting next to me. I was like, this is unbelievable. They still miss. Now, don't get me wrong. They were going by Virginia. Virginia really didn't have a chance. But the other thing, too, is Virginia lost their best overall player, especially
Hunter,
best offensive player.
Yeah.
That hurt them, but. No, UMBC, if you ask me, was beating anybody they played that night. They were beating anybody. They couldn't miss. It was unbelievable. But, no, Mick Cronin, that game, I watched the second half of that game. That whole game, the whole tide of that game turned on that technical. Once Nevada got hit with that technical, the officials completely changed the way they called that game. I'm not saying that's why they won. They obviously became unbelievably hot, and Cincinnati just kind of went to a shell at the end there. But no, I mean, you're taking Cincinnati, your team out of the American. Are they still in the American Conference?
Yes.
Yep.
So you're taking a team out of the American Conference to get in a two seed in the NCAA tournament. No, Mick Cronin's not going anywhere. If anything, from what I understand, Louisville has him and Chris Mack on their list of
I did hear Mack was on the list.
Yeah, Mack is on the list. They didn't want
Mack's
to keep Padgett.
Mack's number one on their list.
Why should he be going to Louisville? I mean, you know, let's fix it. You know, Xavier was a number one seed. They lost to Florida State. You know what? He shouldn't be considered. Yeah. I mean, he should be on the back nine, too. Right, Frank?
Yeah. I mean, when I say coach is on the back nine, it's the fact that Father Time is catching up with them.
Right, right. Just like, what's her name's sister?
Chris Mack's not. How old is Chris Mack? I don't think
he's in his 40s. He plays for Xavier. But, I mean, you know, I guess my feeling is that, you know, this has been just a wacky tournament, and some days, you know, it is what it is. The shots don't fall, and it could be emotional. I mean, look at St. John's. We were playing Lorraine. They came out of nowhere. They beat us and St. Ed's. Now they fell to Cincinnati Molar, but they gave even Molar a good game. I mean, it is what it is. And some days you just don't have it when you deal with young basketball players.
It's all matchups, and it's game to game, and you know, we're the same way in our tournament. We have a player that does not miss free throws, and it's a big reason why we were able to win a district championship, because when we get leads on people, we can just salt the game away and make a free throws. And we played Flat Rock in the regional semifinal and just couldn't hit a free throw. And that's just the way things go. It's a one-game sample size. So, and you know as well as I do nowadays, the game, especially college basketball, is so watered down with talent now, especially with the one-and-dones and everything. You just don't have great dominant teams anymore like you did back in the day. You know, Duke and North Carolina were in the Final Four year after year after year. Not to say that they're bad tournaments, but you just get good teams now. And the way the game has changed too, where it's all about that 3-point line now. And that's why UMBC was able to beat Virginia. They just couldn't miss from out there. And when you're trading threes for twos, that's just a bad recipe.
Right. I think it's great talent with chemistry. I think that's the problem. I think a lot of these teams that have juniors and seniors have really great chemistries. I mean, I've been in a lot of men's leagues where you play a team like, oh, this team's not really good. And then you play them and it's just like they pass the ball and you think, oh, that's a turnover. But the guy is right there because they've played together so long. They just know what spots to pass to, what's a good shot for them. I mean, they just know each other's game, and that's been the problem, I think, with the NCAA. The elite teams don't ever have that time to gel with the elite players so that the little guy gets just blown out the building. I mean, you're right. So that's what it is. Kentucky, I thought, you know, maybe they should, like David said, they need to get rid of John Calipari, even though I think he did a heck of a job this year with this team. They had a bunch of nobodies, really, for his standards. I mean, it was a bunch of athletic freshmen, but they weren't really great basketball players. And, you know, they ended up getting beat by Kansas State that had a little bit more of a, you know, senior-laden team with better chemistry. Now, shaking hands was a little bit different story, but the fact of the matter is it is what it is.
No, you're absolutely right, and that's why I like Villanova. That's why I'm in a good position right now to hopefully sneak out of my bracket with a win. But I've got Michigan versus Villanova. You look at Villanova; it's a team where they don't have these one and dones going, and they're primarily juniors. They have the Omar Spelling, who's a freshman that plays. But when your top players, especially your top guards, are juniors and seniors, that's obviously going to give you a good opportunity. But you look at like Rhode Island; they were all seniors and got smoked by a much more talented Duke team, but. No, you're right. If you look at the Elite Eight teams that are left, you've got Loyola, you've got Kansas State, you've got Michigan, you've got Nova. Those are four heavily junior-senior teams. I'm trying to think who else is left off the top of my head. You got Duke, who's got good leadership with Grayson Allen and some other guys. They've got some freshmen, but you've got seniors on the floor for these teams that are. And you're right. It just helps them gel. Helps them kind of. There's a pecking order involved, and it makes a big difference. There's no doubt.
No, we haven't had David. David, what do you think? Or did you cut David off?
No, David's still on. David, you there?
Yeah, I'm still here. I was just going to ask, Coach, if you have a player, and just kind of a scenario, and people were talking about kind of why Carter sat on the bench for a significant period of time in that second half, and I was just going to ask, if you were in that situation, Jackson, if you had a guy that was in a shooting slump, do you keep him on the floor and kind of work through it, or do you keep him on the bench? Because I've heard conflicting perspectives of do you leave a guy out there on the floor with kind of a not deep rotation, but he's a young guy, but do you also hurt his confidence if you keep him on the bench that long?
That's a tough question because that's what you run into. My whole philosophy is go with the guys that got you there. So you've got Jackson and Nick Ward and these other guys. They're the ones who got you through the points run. You got to be on the floor. I mean, that's my philosophy. And you're right. Confidence plays into it, too. You take a young guy like Jackson, maybe hasn't hit a couple shots, and instead of, you know, reinforcing your belief in him, you sit him on the bench in the biggest moments. That's just not going to bode well when you decide to put him back in crunch time later. My philosophy is, and I'm not saying it's right, but my philosophy is go with the guys that got you there. Great players will make plays for you in big situations. So I would have had him on the floor, but, you know, again, it's hindsight's 20/20. So Coach Izzo knows what he's doing, obviously. And what was the player's name? I can't remember. I've talked – the guy they had at the high post most of that game. That
Ben Carter.
Carter, you know. Obviously, they thought Carter gave them the best chance to score against that zone, which they're pretty smart guys, but – my philosophy.
Hold on, I think Dave, what's going on with David? Because I hear him. Okay, keep going. Sorry about that, Coach Boland. David's.
Oh, that's okay. That's all I have. My philosophy is go with the guys that got you there. Go with the guys that give you the best chance of winning. To me, that's Jackson, that's Bridges, and that's Ward. Maybe all three of them on the floor at the same time. Just go with your best two shooting guards against that zone.
Yeah, that's good. That's good stuff, man. I really enjoy that you called in and gave, you know, a real good coach's perspective of what's going on. So, how long do you give it till Izzo's done? Because, like I said, Frank thinks he's been to the golf course.
I honestly think that it's gonna. I would say within the next 5 to 10 years, I think, until retires.
Coach K could be retiring in 5 to 10 years. I mean, he's in his upper 60s.
Coach K is 70.
Right. But you're not saying he's on the back nine.
Well, I mean, he's not. I think he's going to retire sooner rather than later because I don't foresee him coaching until he's well into his 80s.
You never know. He might be trying to stack those wins so no one ever can catch him.
He's got 1,100 wins. I think they'll likely win the national championship this year, and then they could probably win it next year because it's in Minneapolis, and there's just this thing where. When Duke's been in Minneapolis or Indianapolis,
they've won the championship. They've won. Yeah, that's true. That is true. Now, make sure they don't go to Denver so they get ran off the building like they did in UNLV. They did them by 30 points in 1990.
Yeah.
Any final thought? Actually, Coach Bull, I want to ask you, people think Michigan's got the easiest path to the Final Four. What do you think about that?
Well, I guess.
You play who you play, though.
It's hard to argue with, but I don't think there's an easy path. Florida State's a team that worries me, and I told Frank and these other guys I coach with the same thing. Florida State's just a big, tough, physical team, and they're so good athletically, and they're so long. That's a team that worries me, you know, contesting Michigan's shots. Michigan's going to have to score at the basket. They're going to have to rebound to beat them. There's just no easy path to me.
I don't think so.
It's all hard. But one thing I do want to tell you is I think Billy Donovan's going to be back next year. I'm not sure where, but I have a feeling Billy Donovan's going to be back in the NCAA next year.
Lee Donovan?
Billy Donovan.
Billy Donovan.
Coach of the Oklahoma City Thunder.
Why do you think that?
I just have a feeling. I think at the end of this year, he's going to be kind of getting over exhausted dealing with Westbrook's attitude. I think he's going to lose Carmelo and Paul George, and I think someone's going to make him an offer he can't refuse, and if Mac doesn't end up in Louisville, don't be surprised if you hear Billy Donovan in Louisville. And the other thing too is Roy Williams. You talk about a guy being on the back nine. How much more does Roy Williams have left in the tank? You know,
The defending national champion got blew out by 20. So you know you got to put him on out the pasture.
It's not because of that. It's because he's getting up there.
He's old.
Father time is caught up with him. And a quick thing I wanted to share about tonight's Michigan Florida State game from
from
friend of the show, Danny Greenwood. He said, Jordan, I'll let you listen to this too. Says he doesn't think that Florida State has the athleticism Michigan has. Each game the Michigan plays, they continue to come together and find a way to win the game. It's the third time in Florida State history they've made the Elite Eight. Hey. 1972, 1990, and then something, and 90-something, and then this year they look slow and weak. And I look at their roster, and I believe it is their leading scorer, I believe, if I can bring it up here on my computer.
But meanwhile, the old people.
Florida State is Clever Lang to me. If you're a Rocky fan, that's what worries me about Florida State. You're right. They're not overly talented. They're not overly huge. They're just long and athletic.
And they have
an
edge.
The thing that worries me about Florida State is they're like Clever Lang from Rocky.
Well, I think
they have that attitude. They're going to come in and just try to run right through you. That's the problem.
I mean, they have a couple of guys who – they've got a couple of seven-footers. This Chris Kumadaji from Chad, who's 7'4", and then this Ike Obiaju from Nigeria. But, I mean, other than that, they go, I think, Phil Coe for their second leading score is at 6'8". Hey, Trent Forrest is at 6'5". And I believe, who was it? It's a Terrence Mann, who I think is their point guard. He's a 6'6 guy. So, I mean, they've got a little bit of length. But, I mean, I don't think they're as good of shooters. But then again,
they're not. You're absolutely right. But they're tougher than nails. That's the problem. That's what worries me, is that they're just going to come in and try to go right through Michigan. And I have Michigan winning. Don't get me wrong. I do, because I think when it comes to this tournament, like we talked about, it's been a theme all show. Skill, talent, that's what wins. But it's a one-game sample size. Michigan goes out, gets bullied around, and the refs kind of let him play a little bit. That's something that worries me. Like I said, to me, the best way for me to describe Florida State to me, and I've watched ACC basketball here because I'm a Louisville fan, is to me, they're Clever Lang. They just go, it doesn't matter who they're playing, they're not intimidated. They come out, they're enforcers, and they just go right, they just take it right to your teeth.
Yeah.
And, that's just what worries me. I think Michigan's just got to weather some storms, and they got to be physical. And if they can do that, they'll be in the Final Four.
Now, on this note here, this is what we need for Coach Izzo.
Yeah.
No,
right
no,
there. That
no.
You want him. You want the old Lassie effect. You
no,
see, that
I did
is,
not say
it's
that.
Been a great. It's been a great run, old girl. But you know, I got to do this.
Not me. Oh. All I'm saying is, I think that
and
I'm
Roy sure Williams.
I mean, Roy Williams is probably more likely.
Really? Yeah. They, you know, they Hall of Famers out there, but the game is just,
not getting fired. Though.
He's not going to get fired. He's gonna go out on his own.
Tony Bennett.
He might.
Tony Bennett has been good, but we got to get rid of you.
I call it Frank's firing squad.
Exactly. That's what Frank. That Frank does that. He has the Lassie effect. If you're not doing like he did, he had this a lot with Brad Ausmus in his first half of his first season. I mean, he.
Yeah.
And thankfully, he's gone.
And then you also got Ken. You got Ken Holland.
The entire Detroit Red Wings organization.
Right. Exactly.
Well, that's the whole organization that needs to clean house.
Blashill, you know.
That's, oh, jeez. I've had it with Stan Van Gundy, too.
Yeah, him, too, you know.
Well, Van Gundy, I can't believe at this point. It's time for Van Gundy to go.
Well, they but did guys, really well against... they did good against Houston. I mean, they stayed in the game, at least.
They did. But it's the NBA. It's, you know, those things can happen. But, I just don't understand the whole going to get Blake Griffin thing, giving up Bradley, giving up Harris. You know, Harris, to me, was kind of a nice piece they had at the four. He's just a tough matchup, but obviously he feels pressure to do something, so he pulled the trigger. But
yeah, one of the most underrated threes, I think, in the NBA. Just doesn't get that pub love because he's up in Detroit. I think what the problem is their guard play. You're not going to really win any ball games with Ish Smith. I don't know what the Jackson situation is. If he's healthy, I think this is a great team. But the fact of the matter is Blake Griffin and, you know, Drummond, they can get you all the points you want. But if you don't have excellent guard play, you're just not going to win in the NBA, and they just don't have it.
It's the way he's drafted, too. You know, Donovan Mitchell sitting there, and I know hindsight's 20/20, but, man, oh, man, is Donovan Mitchell lighting it up. I mean, he is – and you could have had him in that, and that could have caused a lot of problems that they have.
True.
But again, that's another situation where you're talking about the game has evolved, and here's Detroit trying to play in the Stone Age with Blake Griffin and Drummond. Don't get me wrong, two great players, but you just can't trade threes for twos anymore. You're just going to lose, and they just don't have it from the perimeter. That's the issue.
Especially in the NBA, those are professional sharpshooters. I mean, you know, maybe right. In college and in high school, I would want a kid trying to shoot a step back 3-pointer. You know, go ahead. You can shoot that 30-foot step back. But in the NBA with Harden and Klay Thompson and Steph Curry, when they're healthy, those guys are paid and professional. I mean, heck, I saw a video just yesterday on Ball Is Life where Klay Thompson shoots better left-handed than 70% of the NBA. I mean,
that's nuts.
Yeah, that's just a different level in craziness. But like I said, I didn't believe in the Blake Griffin hype when they traded him. I said, okay, great. You got a little celebrity. You can put a guy on the $5 Hollow Arena on a poster out there. But if you don't have good guard play, you're not going to go anywhere.
Do you think that was more of a – I'm in trouble. I need to make a move.
Absolutely.
I think there was somewhat of a shakeup. I think maybe some of the players he got rid of maybe got tired of him. You see that sometimes in the NBA when there's just, like with the Cavs, it just wasn't a good fit, and I got to do a move. Now the thing about it is that is Gundy still part of the GM situation?
He is the president of basketball operations.
The problem with the Pistons going on forward now is you got two hefty contracts, and no one's going to really trade for those guys to pick up those contracts unless it's a really lopsided deal now, even though we're going off a little tangent here with some NBA basketball. That's the problem. But I think he was expecting, you know, Jackson to get well, and it's just like the Kawhi Leonard situation. Nobody knows what's really going on with Jackson's health. But when he's good and can play, that team is totally dynamic. It really depends on the guard play. But Ish Smith, He's not bad, but he's a backup guy. He's a guy that's going to – he's only going to give you a good 20 to 25 minutes a game. That's it.
He's a great backup.
Right.
A great
yeah.
backup.
Great backup.
Smith.
But he's not a starter. Yeah. And Bullock – not a starter. You know, Bullock, okay, he's okay. Moreland or whatever his name is, you know, those are okay guys. But like
to
I said,
me,
you need
me,
Jackson.
To me, they're just okay backups.
Right.
And these guys are getting starting minutes. And, you know, like last year, you drafted Henry Ellenson, and you know, he's gotten a little bit more minutes with the trades going on, but I mean, the guy's barely played.
Right.
Why do you draft the guy to not play him?
Right.
You know,
true.
Give him a chance.
Yeah, you wanted the same thing in 2003, signed Darko Milicic.
Right.
Oh, jeez. Yeah, you can't even use that. You know, that was the only camp mystery prospect in that class. That's unbelievable. But,
well, at the time they had Tayshaun. You're right. Yeah, they had Tayshaun Prince, who had basically evolved and came out of nowhere. So they figured, you know, well, we can't put Carmelo because these two are going to be battling each other. And by the way, you won a championship the next year, so it wasn't too bad. And you went to 7 straight conference finals. I mean, hindsight is 2020. Had Darko, you know, maybe you should have drafted maybe D Wade or Carmelo, but at the time it just wasn't going to be the right fit, and you never know. Or Bosh, true. But then again, though, you could have drafted those guys, and the fit in Detroit wouldn't have been good, and they could have had the same career like Darko. I mean, we'll never know what happens. Sometimes in pro sports, it's all about fit. So, but yeah, the Pistons, they're now, hopefully, they better pray to God Jackson gets healthy and plays to the level he's capable of playing, because like I said, with those two bad contracts, or maybe you strike lucky in the draft.
Where are they at right now as far as playoff? I gotta believe they're out of it, correct?
They're
right
out
now.
Of it. I think they're like the 9th or 10th seed, I believe.
I'm gonna see if I can pull up the NBA standings.
Let's see here. Actually,
at least last I heard,
Detroit
they
is 9th. They're 6 games okay. back
six games
of Milwaukee. Right now, them and Charlotte are battling. Now, the thing about it is, there's only what? 8 or 9 games. Actually, there's 72 games played, so they've only got 10 games left. 2 weeks. And the Knicks, the Bulls, the Nets, the Magic, and the Hawks are officially out. So, that lets you know how the NHL and NBA season have gone by pretty fast.
Yeah.
Yeah, I agree. I just wish they were shorter. That's, you know, I just wish they were shorter. But, yeah, I think Van probably... to me on the chopping block this year. I mean, missing the playoffs in the East. Going to the playoffs 2 years ago, and yeah, they got swept by Cleveland, but
they gave them the most competition.
A fairly respectable series.
Yeah, they gave them. Actually, I went to that game and saw Craig Sager for the last time. The game where they got swept, I went to game 4 at the Palace. And that was actually the most competitive series that the Cavs got, because remember, they just swept through everybody else. And then obviously when they got to the Warriors, they won in game 7 in 2016. But I think in a couple of weeks, the Pistons are going to be getting this.
The old vacuum
cleaner.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's time. And I think it might be time to, and you hate to say this, but I think it's time to trade some of those decent assets that you do have. And unfortunately, I don't think anybody's going to take the Blake Griffin contract.
No.
You're going to have to give him away. But I don't know. It'd be interesting to see what happens. It'd be interesting to see who they hire, because the NBA is weird. You know, there's only a handful of good coaches. You kind of got to get lucky there. You almost got to hire someone and hope it works out. But we'll see. I'd like to see him get back to form and get back to their winning ways, because when they were good in the early 2000s, man, it was a lot of fun, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. Coach Bolin, thanks for calling in so much. We got to get on the next segment. We got David, you know, with his NFL preview, or not preview, but his thoughts on Darnold and all that other good stuff.
Yep, thanks for having me, guys. I appreciate it.
No problem, Jordan.
No problem, man. Yep. That was bye. Coach Bolin on the line. Coming up next, though, David, are you ready? Because the radio boss went down, so once we get off air here, there's no content. It's basically dead air. Yeah. So we can get in the power play, and we can get in our NFL offseason. He's got the AFC, and what did you think about Mr. Darnold?
I mean, so he can throw in the ring. Great job. Do you want a medal for that? Do you want a participation trophy?
Oh, man. You guys have been throwing the heat today, man. Throwing the absolute heat. So we'll take a quick commercial break here, as Frank had to get that off his chest with the no apologies. Here, let's see here. That's right. I mean, you want Tom Izzo gone, don't you?
I didn't say I wanted him gone. I just think that I think that he definitely should be taking a long look and look at the program and seeing, like, I've got to do something different because I was getting bounced in early on. That's not an acceptable result.
Yeah, that's true.
When you fail, you got to look at what you can do to avoid failing again.
As I said, Frank, put an application and maybe you can get on the staff. You could maybe be the Michigan State social media director.
That's not going to happen anytime soon.
Why not? Why don't you think so?
They've got people to run their Twitter.
Oh,
Facebook.
But you ain't telling them how to run it, huh? But you're telling Coach Izzo how to run a team.
Well, and plus, there's probably a couple of people up there who I would not get along with in the media that I have ripped on the show before.
Yeah, that is true. You do be ripping on
that
them.
That would be, yeah, one Graham Couch.
Okay. Well, coming up next, we'll have David the Man of God Harris's segment where he talks a little bit about what he thought about Sam Darnold and some AFC offseason moves, and then we'll finally end the show with the power play. And then if I don't get the password for the radio boss, there won't be nothing on air. I'll go figure. Anyway, 88.3 WGTs. After further review, you can listen to us on the podcast, on SoundCloud, and on iTunes. We'll be back after this.